Welcome to Orphan Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to exploring the universe of public domain media. I'm Christopher. And joining me today is Lydia and Barry. Welcome back.
Hi.
The crew is whole once again.
Yay.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear your guys' voices. It's been a while. Almost 2 months now.
Yeah.
And maybe even longer since all three of us have been on together.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could all get together for this one. Because today we'll be discussing, it says 1952. I've also seen 1953, The Road to Bali, starring Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, and Dorothy L'Amour.
Kind of like the three of us.
That's right.
I call Bing. You call Bing? All right, I'll be Bob. That's fine. I can live with that. It's wild. It's wild out there. This is the second to last of the Road to pictures, and the last one filmed by Paramount Pictures, and this is the only one filmed in color. And I can't imagine, you know, I can't imagine these not being filmed in color, honestly, the way they as far as the exotic locales and everything that this series goes to. It's a shame that this is the only one that was in color.
I agree, and the costumes were done by Edith Head, and they're beautiful, and they completely pop off the screen. You're absolutely right. The whole thing has, like, this Looney Tunes quality to it. I've only seen The Road to Morocco, so it's been a while since I've seen these films, but yeah, I completely agree with you. They really just – they feel like a Looney Tunes cartoon come to life in color.
Yeah, absolutely. Lydia, what are your thoughts? How many of the Road to films have you seen, Lydia?
You know, oh, gosh, that's a good question. See, now I've got to pull up the list. I've seen, four of them.
Oh, so you're going to be our Road to expert.
Yeah.
I am sure I have seen several.
Right.
But I wouldn't remember what they were.
Right.
I have a
Can
feeling if I go back
songs?
And
that's the question.
No, I cannot sing the song.
So I'll be honest.
No, I have a feeling.
I have a feeling
if I went back and watched him, I'd go, "Wow, this looks familiar."
Right. I remember this part. I know I've seen The Road to Utopia and The Road to Morocco and Road to Bali are a couple of my favorite movies. I should say loose favorite movies, and I'm confident I've seen The Road to Zanzibar, but not positive. So I could be mixing that up with The Road to Singapore, too. But, yeah, these are obviously – it's a non-sequatorial series that Bing and Bob and Dorothy did together. But you don't have to see one to see the others because they're all kind of independent but similar.
Exactly. Okay, well, good, because this I'm counting this as kind of my – believe it or not, my first Road to picture.
Oh.
Like I said, I'm sure I've seen others, but I just – I don't have any firm memory of it, so I'm counting this as my first, and I'm going to go back and kind of watch some of the others when I get a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I can tell, this may be the only one that is officially in public domain.
That's what I'm seeing as well. I'm not seeing anything else that's currently in public domain.
Which is odd, being the last one that Paramount filmed, being the first one to go into public domain.
Oh.
And the first one in color. You would think this is the one that they would latch onto and do the special releases and clean it up.
I was going to say that's probably where they got confused. They thought, oh, we don't have to. Oh, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shock. I mean, out of all the titles that so far your podcast has covered, this is the one where I figured, I mean, come on, this is a classic film. It was a huge hit in its day. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed, like, the Road movies aren't just available on one big, like, box set, that this one is just kind of out there for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand there might be some ancillary rights for some DVD releases or something out there, but the film itself is just – it's there's actually quite a few DVD releases thanks to its public domain status.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would really expect this one to show up in some sort of – like Barry was saying, in a box set or the Criterion Road to
right.
collection or
yeah.
something like
yeah.
that. Because this would look absolutely gorgeous, all cleaned up
really
and put out on a DVD release.
Yeah, there are a lot of qualities to this movie in particular that you see in a lot of older films, a lot of the old John Wayne films. I'm trying to think of any other names that would pop out, but you know, there's a few classic items that show up in films even as recently as the 1980s, which is something that we'll chat about when we get to it. But just things, gags and special effects, quote, special effects, unquote, that have been carried over into a whole lot of other movies. And so you would think that you'd think that somebody would have picked it up because it's, you know, it has a lot of common threads with other really well-known films.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say, was that a total tangent?
No, not at all.
I lost my mind halfway through that statement, but it's okay. You can
I'm glad you mentioned the special effect. There's a few effects in here that I remember I sat and watched and went, you know, for 1950s, that's impressive as hell.
There are a few things, yeah.
Yeah, some really good stuff.
As well as some tribal stereotypes.
Well, yes.
Yeah, this is not going to be the most PC film that we'll watch, but definitely, definitely so far one of the more entertaining.
Yeah, maybe I need to make up a disclaimer for our podcast that the views expressed in the films reviewed on Open Entertainment do not necessarily reflect the views of the hosts or the commentators.
There are some things on here. But I love some of the, I mean, you know, there is, of course, a wealth of topics to cover in this movie, but there are some things that even now are still touchy subjects anyway, let's get on to those because those will be fun to talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get on to it. I'll admit, I mean, I think, Lydia, you and I had this issue the last time we tried to do a comedy, is it's really hard to kind of go through the plot point by point because so much of it is just it's comedy gags and you can't really describe them without ruining them.
Well, and that's so, yeah, that's a lot of it. I think especially with the Bing and Bob movies, hold on.
New Move Free Ultra Omega.
That's awkward.
A revolutionary
hold on.
For 2 times better joint comfort. Join the movement. Healthy joints, move free.
What the heck was that?
That's the goofiest ringtone I've ever heard.
No, sorry. I usually mute my TV but because I have my headphones on, but I forgot this time. So some pop-up just, you know, did a commercial.
Gotcha.
Oh, my gosh. What the heck was I saying?
I was talking about how it's hard to go through a point-by-point synopsis. Yeah.
So with these Bing and Bob films, a lot of these, the movie or the plot – so-called plot in the movie is really just a framework for what comes down to kind of a short comedy routine, you know, to comedy routines, almost like a Saturday Night Live or that kind of thing where you have these little sketches of funny things, but and the storyline is made up just to promote these sketches, you know, coming into effect. So right. It's not a, you know, very complex storyline. At all. It's not
the plot is kind of used as just to set up a moment for the stars to do their thing.
Exactly, which is what I was trying to say and
it's so many words.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Dorothy doesn't say a lot in these movies.
she doesn't need to. She's Dorothy Lamar. She's gorgeous.
Yeah. She's got that one up on me, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, we will try to go through a little bit of the story here as we go. And I admit right off the bat, I love the fact this is something I've never seen in any other film is that the names of the stars are actually sung in the opening credits.
Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Dorothy Lamour.
How cool is that? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I now have something to aspire to. Actually, we might now have something to aspire to in this podcast.
Here we go. We'll get a singing trio to introduce us.
I'll see what he can do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Well, our story opens up in Melbourne, Australia, where Bing and Bob, I guess I should have their names up. What are their characters' names? Harold and...
George.
George. Thank you. George and Harold. Harold is Bob, I think. No.
George is Bing, Harold is Bob.
Come on.
What's that? I'm sorry.
I said... Never mind the confusion. It's Bing and Bob. Come on. We don't need to worry about fictitious names.
All right. Good. All right. I'm happy with that. Bing and Bob. I will pull it up here. Sorry. I'm sure in my notes I probably list them somewhere. Anyway.
I didn't know they had fictitious names. I've just been, I just thought they were Bing and Bob the whole movie.
Yeah, they should have been.
No. Dorothy, a.k.a. Lala, says, calls them Georgia Harold the whole thing.
Yeah. That's true.
But they're always, they're Bing Crosby and Bob Hope.
Yeah, they're, yeah, exactly. They're doing a sort of a vaudevillian show, a song and dance for a crowd.
Literal song and dance.
Yeah.
Literal, yeah. And it turns out apparently they are always on the prowl and have been wooing a couple young ladies whose fathers don't approve of them popping the question to their to the young girls. And it actually, of course, they sneak out during their routine, and it leads to one of the first gags, and probably I thought was pretty fun, is one of the guys, of course, being in Australia, one of the fathers throws a boomerang, which Bob Hope catches and says, come on, let's go. It'll drive him crazy when this doesn't come back.
I actually wrote that one down. I tried to write down all my favorite one-liners, but after a while, I just stopped. There are so many. Bob just throws out so many great one-liners in this movie.
He does. Both of them. Actually, yeah, Bob is good for the one-liners. He is good for the one of my favorite gags that runs throughout the film is the breaking the fourth wall.
Yes.
I always, in any kind of comedy, I always love that gag.
For those of you who are listening and not sure what that means, that's not where they throw somebody through a wall or a window. That's when the actor turns and actually talks to the camera and, you know, says, oh, hey, guys, yes, look out for this.
Yep. Acknowledges the audience, which I don't know. I don't know what it is about that. I just think that that's fun. It's certainly played right. I think it can be really clever and just adds just a certain element to a comedy that I've just always appreciated.
It's like creating that inside joke between the actor and the audience that otherwise, yeah, the joke's still there, but you don't feel like you're in on it. It's just pulling the audience in and making a part of it.
Right. So anyway, they try to avoid the family. So they hop a train, go on to who knows where. And, of course, to save a little bit of money and avoid suspicion, one rides in the train and one rides in the wheels under the train.
And you really only need one guest to figure out who's going to be inside of the train and who's going to be under it. And this is a really common theme with these road films. Bob Hope always kind of gets the short end of the stick on every single deal that they do. So he's hanging on underneath with an umbrella, I think, or a cane or something like that hooked over part of it.
I think he's just hanging, just kind of laying back in the wheels, and Bing uses a cane to lower him some food.
There you go.
Which is awesome.
Out the window.
One of the fathers comes on and spots him, though, and so he goes diving off the window and dragging Bob along with him, thanks to the cane. And then I like they start singing a little bit. They find themselves surrounded by a herd of sheep.
Because they are in – is it Australia or New Zealand? Does it matter?
They're in Australia. Yeah. They're still in Australia. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a great gag.
So they start singing a little song. Bing's trying to make Bob feel a little better and starts singing a song to bring him up, and the sheep join in.
I'll do it. Okay, so it's we're poor little lambs who've lost our way, and the sheep all go which is of course part of the song, which is what makes it funny. But yeah, sure enough, the sheep in amazing Technicolor. Yeah. And they're watching a couple of the sheep run along, and I guess the sheep are colored. Is it red, yellow, and blue? And they say, "Oh, that's where they get the Argyle socks from."
Right. Yes, the Argyle sock gag. Yeah, apparently weeks have passed, weeks or months have passed. They've been traveling with the sheep, and they get to a town along with the rest of the herd, and there is a yellow, a blue, and a red painted sheep. Well, look at that. Oh, those are for Argyle. Now, there's a gag that will only work in a color film.
That's right.
They were probably waiting six movies just to be able to make
a color comment. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
That's right. Well, go get a little bit of cash. They start looking for a job, and the only job available in town is deep sea divers. So, being the fact that apparently they like to just grab whatever they can wherever they go, and regardless of whether they know how to do it, sure, we can do that. It turns out this job is for a prince or a leader of an exotic island paradise. I lost my notes.
Are you looking for his name?
I wasn't necessarily looking for his name. I was looking for, like, the island name or something. Oh, okay. Not well, that it really matters, I guess.
It's Prince Kenarok.
Kenarok, thank that you. Up.
And he and one of his henchmen are hanging around looking for somebody. And the guy who is hired, the temp agency, I suppose is what he is, says, oh, no, so many people, we've already sent you our best divers and none of them have come back. And, of course, Prince Kenarok, being the kind of skeezy guy in this film, says, oh, it's not our fault. Accidents happen.
Right.
So the temp guy says, oh, well, we're not going to give you any more of our guys. They just, none of them come back. So, you know, basically, you know, no way. And they go outside. And, of course, who should they run into?
But Bing and Bob.
Bing and Bob.
Yeah, I think at that point, too, they set up the idea of the some sort of demon or underwater protector or something off the coast of this island that is claiming the lives of all the divers.
Bogaten.
Bogaten, thank you.
You're welcome. That one I know.
So they head off to the island paradise. And probably one of the first fourth wall gags is they're heading to the boat and they hand one of the crew, you know, their luggage, which are two toothbrushes. and the crew member is just wearing a wrap around his waist. He's shirtless. And he's like, wait, does everyone on your island dress like that? Kid just nods. And I think it was Bob that turns to Bing. He's like, you don't suppose.
And of course, Bing says,
and Bing's like, don't get your hopes up. And
what does he
Bob
say? Something like the censors would never allow it. Something like that.
Bob turns to the audience and says, stick around, folks. You never know. He might be wrong. So we get to the island. We meet the Princess Lala in a beautiful little song and dance of her own. And I love films in the 50s or even in the 40s, any of these older films where the island women are always wearing the native dress, but with high heels.
And that's of what course, I do. You guys don't
it
do
always,
that?
Oh, okay.
You
don't
wear
my
patent
mistake.
Leather shoes when you're out in shorts and a tank top. Come on.
You're in an island beach covered paradise and high heels is the footwear of choice.
Nothing,
I didn't
yeah,
know.
Nothing else sinks into sand the way that high heels do. But no, you're right. Also, you may not have noticed, but, you know, being the girl, of course, I noticed what the floor looks like. And I think she's walking across if it's not a marbled floor, it's definitely some kind of extremely nice stone flooring. Really remarkably good for a kind of backwoods island nation where people
well she's the princess. Come on, she's a princess, this is her palace.
I've been to Thailand and I didn't notice floors quite like that, but yeah, you can definitely tell this was filmed in Hollywood.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, at this point I just kind of have a thing that's like gags ensue because there's a good 20-30 minutes where that's pretty much what it is. Like we're saying, this pretty much leads up to the first concert for Bing and Bob.
One letter. So they meet Lala, they find out that they find out that her father was a Scottish man and her mother was the princess or the queen of this island.
Right. Yeah, she's Lala McTavish.
Yes, Lala McTavish, and she has an affinity for plaid. which I don't know that comes in even any time in the future of this movie, but yes, there's plaid on this island. Her and Prince Kenarok is Lala's cousin, and a skeezy cousin he is.
Yes, absolutely. He's just pretty much, she's upset that he's brought these two new divers because she's sure it's just a death sentence.
Just like all the others.
Yeah. Oh, there was a joke. I didn't get it. I had to look it up. There's a point where they're shown to their room, and there's a placard on the door that said Sadie Thompson slept here. I had to look that one up. Yeah, apparently, Sadie Thompson was a silent film star, and one of her best known roles was in a film that was based on the short story Rain. They mentioned that, it looks like we might get some rain when they see the name on the door. I just had to look that joke up. That was a very
obscure.
Yeah.
Obscure. And honestly, a little obscure even for 1950s. Because her career was in the 20s and 30s. So, yeah, wow. That's really, I'm sure maybe for Bob or Bing, it was.
Well, and Sadie Thompson is the name of that movie, not of the actual actress in it. So if you had seen the film,
oh sorry,
that's okay. Yep. No, I'm having to do a little research here too. Starring Gloria Swanson, the name is Sadie Thompson, but she ends up going to an island to start a new life, and apparently, it gets. I really don't know beyond that, but since you brought it up, I thought I'd clarify.
Thank you very
much. You're welcome. I do my best. That's the only reason you have me here. Well, one of the better reasons.
But yes, we do see a fun song and dance from Bing and Bob in full Scottish gear.
Now, this is one of my favorite numbers in any of the road movies. Because, they're done up as Scotsmen. They've got
the burr.
The horns. The what?
The burr. The burr.
The burr. Well, I was going to go with the what's the instrument they've got.
The bagpipe.
Thank you. They've got that thing.
Put man out of my way. Who do you think you are? It's the toe of my boot. The man, if you push too far, put man, this is the day I celebrate my birth. The seventh son of a seventh son of a gun from birth. Who can play the drums? Is there a piper in the town? Have them put their kilts on and come right down. All ye brawny lads, whether you're poor or men of wealth, meet me in the tavern to drink my health. Who's that standing in my path?
Don Clare!
Don't you know you're face to face with Robbie McBeth?
Robbie McBeth!
Hey, put him on out of my way. Who do you think you are? It's the toe of my boot. Come on, if you push too far. Put him on, this is the day I celebrate my birth. The seventh son of a seventh son of a son of a gun from birth. Oh, oh.
Say, Haggis.
What is it, McBaggis?
Have you heard the latest about McTavish?
What's he done now?
He's living on the roof.
Why would he be living on the roof?
He heard someone say the drinks are on the house.
The drinks are on the house. You know, but we...
It's a little late, so good night, folks.
And they get this deadpan stare from everybody in the audience who are, of course, all... Islanders that are just going, what? But I love it though, because they constantly in all of their little routines, they kind of stop and do these little gags in the middle of them. But the song in this one is one of the more enjoyable, one of the funnier ones.
Yeah, awesome.
These two are dazzling performers. I got to say, this number and the one that opens the movie, it's almost done entirely in one uninterrupted take. It just shows like the showmanship of these guys, the dancing, the back and forth. These guys are just wonderfully seasoned performers, and we're really seeing them at their best in this movie.
Well, and they play so well off each other, and they worked so long together. That you're absolutely right. You can really see that. I mean, there are a couple of guys that the reason that their names are so big is because they were so good at what they did.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it so much in the Scottish routine, but in the opening routine, since you brought it back up, Barry, it was something I noticed that when you watch them, it's a very real performance because it is not choreographed to the point where all their movements are in step with each other. Some of them are a little off here and there. It's almost like it.
It's a little really vaudevillian.
It's very vaudevillian, but it really does feel like it's a live performance. Like they kind of like Bing and B- Bob went there and he's like, well, you don't really need to rehearse that.
Yeah,
that much.
We already know it. Yeah. We'll just do it.
We know that. Yeah, well, we'll just do it.
And you see, I think it's in this song, in the Scottish one, where you can tell they kind of start cracking each other up because they're, you know, they dance one way and one will kick the other one, and then they dance the other way and the other one will kick the other one, you know, and they kind of start cracking each other up. And this, I mean, I think that's a lot of what's so funny about watching these is, you know, just like when you're watching the Carol Burnett Show or Saturday Night Live and people are starting, you know, they're cracking each other up during the skit. It's so much funnier when you know that the people that are doing it even can't keep themselves from laughing.
That's right.
Yeah, there's real joy in this performance here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, both the men start trying to make the move, trying to get in good with Princess Lala. They're both, of course, quite smitten with her, and she seems to be actually getting a little smitten with both of them as well. And she shows them a magic trick or two, including the old Indian rope trick. And then a special trick just for Bob, she brings out a basket and a flute, and then kind of one of the goofier jokes, if a cobra comes out, that's all yours. Hey, we'll split it. Oh, what? He's like, you know what? Don't ad-lib, guys. But she plays the flute, and a beautiful woman steps out of the basket. And so Bob decides, I love the fact that he decides what he's going to do the rest of the night. He takes the flute and the basket. He's going to go off practice.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. Well, they head out. I think by that point.
We're missing a little bit of a conversation. This is the moment that Dorothy and Bing, Lala and George get alone together. And she tries to warn him about the demon of the deep or the whatever it is that's been causing all these accidents. And she says there's a horrible beast, Boga 10. You know, he's been causing all these deaths. And, you know, and I wouldn't want to see you get hurt. And he says, oh, no, you know, I'm not the one that does the diving. It's the other guy that does the diving. Of course, Bob Hope's not present for this conversation. And she says, but you got to convince him not to do it. And he says, oh, that won't help. The more dangerous I tell him it is, the more he's going to want to do it. So, you know, sure enough, he goes back to the room a little bit later and has a little conversation and says, well, you know, we're going to get paid all this money. It's going to be great. And man, I wish I was you. I wish I was going down. And Bob says, what? Wait, you are going down. And Bing says, oh, no. You're the one that's going to go down. And Bob says, oh, no, you're going to have to do it. And Bing says, really? Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And Bob says, wait a minute. Why? He says, well, because Lala says she'll only marry the guy that does it. So then, of course, Bob has to do it.
Right. You know, Bing is a con man.
He is
even to his good friend.
Dyed in the wool. And that's another one of the themes that just runs through these films is every time, if he can turn it to his own advantage, you have Bing coming out on top of this.
I enjoy the fact that Bob tries on a couple occasions to do the same, but it never works out quite as well. Doesn't work. He's not as suave as Bing.
Not quite.
Well, Lydia, you would know, Lydia, isn't it Road to Morocco where Bing sells Bob into slavery?
Yes, he does. He sells him for a meal and for some extra cash on top of it. And that's a whole nother one. I wish that one was available to us in this genre, in this sphere. Side note there. Yes, Road to Morocco, same thing happens. He gets the bottom end of the stick. And definitely watch that one, folks, if you get around to it.
Another one of my favorite lines comes up a little bit after this. After they go to bed, Bing gets up and sees that Bob's asleep. So he goes and kind of wanders off with the basket and the flute and tries tries his hand at it. And, of course, a woman comes out with the unibrow. She's a little bit of a beefier woman. And
that's so nice, Christopher. She's stocky.
Stocky.
Very stocky.
Very, very stocky. And Bob comes to the rescue and grabs the flute and wishes her away. And he says something to the effect, hey, don't fool with the fun flute unless you consult the master.
I think that's exactly what he said. But yeah, you can tell. I think he comes back before that with just tons and tons of leis around his neck because, of course, you know, that's what they do. Every time a woman comes out, she puts a lei around his neck. And he's just got all these leis all over him.
Yeah, there are some fantastic sight gags that just, you know, we could not sit here and do them justice.
It would take us hours to describe each of these, yeah. And I mean, yeah, you know, absolutely. Obviously the movie's hour and a half long, so watch it.
Yep.
So they do go off to do this deep sea dive and get what apparently turns out to be a treasure chest.
Exactly. A small box that it was a shipwreck that sank when Lala's father went out in a boat. He went to sell some jewels in Bali, and the ship hit a reef outside their bay, I guess. And then everyone that's come to try to claim it has been taken by this giant squid. So, yes, they go down. Bob goes down.
Another one. I got to back it up. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So
sorry.
One of my other favorite parts of this movie is, you know, they're getting Bob all suited up. He's all set to go. You know, he's got this diving suit with, of course, the pump tube on it because this is the 1950s. Right. And
well, yes, right. He doesn't even know about
he's there. And Lala says to George, you have to remind Harold, remind him about Boga 10. And he is, oh, yeah, yeah, right. And so he goes and he knocks on the little screen and Bob lifts the screen and he says, Boga 10. And Bob goes, Boga 10. Listens it again. I love that.
I loved it when Lala gives Bob a kiss good luck, and then Bing immediately shuts the screen and Bob steams up.
The whole little faceplate steams over.
That is awesome.
But you're right. So he does go down, and sure enough, now this is one of the parts that I wanted to talk about, because you guys may not know this, but the reason I brought up the Duke is because John Wayne was in a movie with Paulette Goddard, who, by the way, was in a movie later on with Bob Hope called, I can't think of what it's called, but look it up. And, but John Wayne and Paulette Goddard are in a movie a decade before this in 1942, and it uses, I want to say it uses some of the same, exact same shots of a squid attacking a diver that are used in The Road to Bali. If
oh,
it's
cool.
not
oh, cool.
the exact same shots, they are very similar. So keep an eye out for that. Definitely the same giant squid, though. No question about that at all.
I think you're talking about Reap the Wild Wind.
That's what I said. Did I not say that?
Oh, did you? I didn't think you said it because you couldn't think of the title.
No. Reap the Wild Wind is the one with John Wayne and Paulette Goddard. Paulette Goddard mm-hmm. was in a movie
oh.
with Bob Hope called The Ghostbreakers. The Ghostbreakers, that's what it was called.
Okay.
Also a great movie. Both of those are both great movies. But the whole point is the giant squid, which, by the way, one other thing. You guys know Goonies?
Yes, sure.
Okay, so at the end, the one kid says the octopus was by far the scariest.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is another one of those. So it's a cut scene in Goonies, which I've only ever seen it once. I don't remember where I saw it, but it has that same giant squid attacking them in that clipped part between when they come out of the water slide chutes and actually get up onto the ship. There's a break, and there's a cut scene of a fight with an octopus that uses the same giant squid.
That's oh, right. Interesting.
It's
yeah.
cool footage. Yeah, I've seen it too. It's awesome. It was right before they go on the ship and see One-Eyed Willie. It's a great scene. I don't know why they cut it. It would have fit perfectly in the movie.
Well, I think they just kind of were like, yeah, it fits, but it doesn't fit. We haven't mentioned a giant squid in the rest of the movie. If you listen to the commentary, I know they mention it but on Goonies, obviously. But, of course, nobody mentions, oh, yeah, this is the same giant squid that was in this movie with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. But all that huge tangent just to see, this is actually quite a famous and well-used giant
squid.
It's
a very famous squid.
It's very well So this was not just a one-off for the squid. The squid hung around Hollywood for a while.
Well, Bob uncovers the treasure chest, which is probably the smallest and dinkiest, most disappointing looking treasure chest I've ever seen.
It depends on what's in it.
That's right. That's right.
As a woman, let me just say, it depends on what's in it.
he uncovers it, but of course the squid comes and does the polite knock on his helmet.
And then I love it because up above on the ship, they're up there pumping the air down to Bob Hope, and you can hear him yelling, ah! And they're like, what's going on?
Yeah, so they they jam the air. They pump. They hit the pump faster and faster to fill him with air to bring him back up. And of course, the suit balloons up out of the water, shoots out of the water, flies down. It's floating on the water, and they bring it to the ship. At which point the Prince Kenarok empties a gun into it, and it deflates
straight down right to the deck.
Right, Bob's not in there. Where is he? Well, of course, most of the crew get scared, talk about Bogotan, they jump ship.
Which, if you think about it, is not the brightest move to make if you're afraid of a giant squid.
No, if you're afraid of a giant squid. No, I think I'd stay on the boat.
Oh, no, I know what it is. They say, it's witchcraft. That's what it is. So,
oh, okay.
They go, witchcraft, and they jump off the boat into the waiting arms of Bogotan.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently.
Very strange.
I'm just, you know, speculating.
Well, does Bob show up before or after Bogotan sweeps Kenarok off the boat?
I think he shows up after, crawls back up on. You can see ink stains all over him.
Right. And they've recovered the box. Kenarok was swept off, but he survives. They show him swimming off.
Yeah. And Bing says, hey, how did you get loose from that giant squid? And Bob says, well, I'll tell you. And he stops and he looks at the camera. And then he says,
right.
Come over here. And he goes over and you see him making all these motions. And finally he walks off and Bing shakes his head and walks up to the camera and looks and just gets this puzzled look on his face and just walks away.
Whoa.
You never know. We never know how he escaped the dreadful tentacles of Bogotan.
That's right. Well, they know Princess Lala says they can't go back to shore because Prince Kenarok would just have them killed as soon as they stepped off the ship. So they decide to take the boat. And with the jewels and head to Bali.
Another good example, I think, of them just trying to push the story along. This is Princess Lala. Why would all of a sudden Kenarok just be able to have her kill? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Get on to the next song.
That's right. So unimportant. Well, again, I have in my notes, more gags ensue.
That sums up the plot.
Yeah. Somehow, do they get shipwrecked on Bali, or do they land on Bali?
Well, not yet. Before that, they have some discussion on the ship. They talk about the jewels. They have a cute little gag with the jeweler's loop, and I forget who that was. Never mind. And then, of course, Bingo heads up to the deck to talk to Lala. And again, Bob looks at the crowd and goes, he's getting ready to sing. Now's a good time for some popcorn.
Yeah. I love that.
And sure enough, Bing goes up and goes and serenades Princess Lala. But, of course, no one's at the wheel, despite the fact that she keeps telling them, you should really get the wheel. It's dangerous waters here. but they don't. And, yes, they do run ashore.
There you go.
And are, again, shipwrecked. I don't think they make it to Bali.
That's right, and they come trudging out of the water, and if I'm not mistaken, Bing is carrying Bob. Oh, no, you know what? Maybe Dorothy's carrying Bob.
No, that comes later.
Oh, no, you're right. Bing's carrying Bob.
But they make it to the island, and I guess is it at this point that Lala admits that she really likes them both, but for different reasons she can't quite place it, and they do a little flashback.
Lala's on the boat, actually, you're right, and she says, "I don't know, Harold. I don't know if I love you for what you are, or what you were."
Right, you're like, well, what do you mean? Apparently, her father brought her a present. It was a young chimpanzee, and you see this flashback, this young girl calling. Little, what was
Sandy.
It?
Sandy.
Sandy. And it's this poor chimpanzee with a Bob Hope mask on.
Which, honestly, if you thought the chimpanzees couldn't get any creepier, yeah, no, you were wrong. It's pretty creepy.
It's extremely creepy. Yeah, Sandy. Oh, I'm nobody's monkey. So they're on the island, and again, a few more gags ensue, including one. This was a fun one. They get a little a little island crazy. They look and they think they see Humphrey Bogart and the African Queen.
Oh my gosh, yes. I forgot about that.
It's a great gag.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. Get chased.
Man, is he lost.
They get chased by a tiger. They come across a hut and stay for the night. And another song, which I got to admit, guys, I'm sorry, Barry, but Bob is my favorite. I know, but no, I love Bob Hope in these movies. Maybe it's because he's fun. Maybe it's because my boyfriend is kind of weird. but no, that kind of, I don't know. It's just the goofy humor, and it always cracks me up. So he actually does get a song in this one, his own song. He doesn't usually get those, trying to woo Dorothy. And then, of course, Bean comes out in the middle of it and cuts right in.
It's just the merry-go-round around.
The merry-go-round. I love this song.
I love that song.
It's fun. And then, they all get up there, and they're swinging on the vines and singing. And I love the monkeys in this part. They're just little monkeys. There's nothing important about them, but they're so cute.
They are.
And so they go to sleep, and it shows them.
This is the best.
Shows them dreaming.
Oh, this is the best.
You got Bing, and he's there sleeping, and you can see his dream bubble, and it shows him, and he looks around the back of this girl with dark hair, and the girl turns, and it's Dorothy L'Amour. And then it shows Bob, and he looks around this girl, and the back of her head, and she turns around, and it's Dorothy L'Amour. And then it shows Dorothy dreaming, I forgot his name.
And it's Dean Martin.
Dean Martin
and
leans
Jerry
around
Lewis.
With long hair, and the girl turns around, and it's Jerry Lewis. I love it. It cracks me up. And also, funny, Jerry Lewis and oh my gosh, I can't think of his name. Dean Martin show up also in the Ghostbreakers. So it's you got to get the impression that they kind of swapped roles for each other a couple times in there. But I love it. I love it that they were able to bring all these people in to as gags to. Just do little clips here and there. But yeah, love the dream sequence. Great.
The dream sequence, fantastic. But one of the gags I really enjoyed the best was, I don't know if it came before or after this, but when they're going through the jungle and Bob is caught in an animal snare.
Oh, yeah.
And he's hanging from the tree. And all suddenly, Dorothy and Bing hear someone coming, so they go and hide. And a guy, shows up in full, safari gear with a rifle. And Bean comes out and he says, "Oh, hey, how you doing? Good. Go ahead." And he, fires the rifle and then, "Okay, thanks," and walks off. And Dorothy's like, "Well, who is that?" He's like, "Oh, it's my brother. I told him I'd give him a shot in a picture."
And I mean, it's his brother too. It's
Bob it is.
Brother. I mean, Bing Hope's brother. Bing Hopes and Bob Hopes. And it's Bing Crosby's brother. There, you can edit that part in. Yeah, lots of great little visual gags.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So they sleep through the night.
Yeah, I think they get captured by the natives then the next morning.
Well, I know that Dorothy goes for a swim.
Oh, right, another fun gag too with Bing and Bob.
And they're leaning on a branch watching her, and the branch breaks.
Right,
but they
and
both just stay up.
They're at about a 40-degree angle over the water. Like, why aren't we falling? You kidding?
But it's Paramount
wouldn't Paramount dare.
Paramount wouldn't dare. And then somehow a gorilla gets involved in it. Oh, that's right. The tiger that chased them.
The tiger that
killed her
a gorilla.
Mate. Yeah.
Right.
And so another gorilla shows up. Another gorilla shows up, and she, being a woman gorilla, because you can tell because she's wearing a bow in her hair, like gorillas do, like men dressed as female gorillas do.
Right.
First she goes for Bing, and he's singing, and Bob Hope gets her away, and then suddenly she gets shot by a dart, a poisonous dart, and falls.
Yes, it's a poison that was the twitching giggles.
I think it's a twitching laugh or something like that.
Long story short, they're captured by natives.
Yeah. All that's
but as it turns out, yeah, you're talking about the plaid. The plaid shows up again because you'd think he's a chief. He's some elder of the tribe, happens to be wearing a plaid, like a cummerbund almost or something. And Lala notices it. and says, "Oh, that's the, you know, that's the color of my father's clan," and, "Oh, you're Princess Lala, you're friends, so everything's fine." And let's see.
Until he takes her to see the chief of the village.
That's right, because they want to go. She confides in this elder that she can't decide which one of these men she wants to marry. So he says, "Well, on this island, you can marry both of them." She thinks that's a great idea. But yeah, the actual chief of the island doesn't like it because all his wives are aging and getting old, and he could use some young blood.
Right? Yeah, you know, so like you do.
He decides he's going to marry Lala.
"You cannot do this thing. She has given her heart to the two Americans.
Those white mice.
I have an idea. Instead of their hearts, Lala shall have their heads shrunken. So, they make lovely bedposts."
"But Ramayana, listen to the wedding chant. Already the two grooms are being prepared. We cannot stop this ceremony without insulting the gods and your people."
"Why not have your ceremony with two grooms and no bride?"
"Excellent! Two grooms and no bride."
"No! Rajang, the god of the sleeping volcano, will not permit the sacrilege of a wedding without a bride."
"Who rules this island, you or the volcano?"
"You're right. I rule this island. I, not that volcano!"
"Rajang, god of the sleeping volcano, do you approve of this action?" "You see?
A silly superstition for old women. You do not fool Ramayana with your ventriloquism."
"Yes. Now go. Attend the wedding of the two grooms. Without a bride."
You don't scare us with your ventriloquism.
Right. Because there's a volcano shaking the entire island saying no.
Yeah.
But they do. They get them all dressed up, and I think that at some point being asked, "Hey, is Princess Lala going to be wearing this outfit too?" And they say, "Oh, yes, the princess will be dressed."
Oh, right, too. Yes. Yeah, complete full headdress.
Full headdress, yep. All these feathers everywhere. And they go out and perform the ceremony in a very daring and, at the time, completely non-PC move. Bing and Bob get married to each other.
That's right.
Well, George and Harold.
Yeah.
So they take their wedding drink and pass out, and the next scene is two men in bed.
Yeah, they wake up in bed together. Yeah,
but they've both got clothes on because this is 1952.
Oh, of course.
And they each kind of reach behind their back and find each other's hands and then figure out what's going on and go, what do they say? "There's a man in bed with his Lala."
Yeah, there's a man in our bed. I know, I'm holding his hand.
I've got him. And then they jump up. "What are you doing here?"
Can I just say, as an aside, the last movie I watched today prior to Road to Bali was Behind the Candelabra with Michael Douglas and Matt Damon, the Liberace film.
Oh my gosh, I saw that recently.
It was really weird to watch those two films back to back. And then I get to that scene, Road to Bali, and I'm like, that's so weird that it would be two films in one day that would have this.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's a very, very daring kind of thing for them to have done with two such big actors at this in this time period.
Oh, yeah, 1952, it's unheard of.
You know, even as a gag, you know, to get
Oh,
I think it was probably accepted as a gag because it was just simply so outrageous.
Yeah. Well, which is,
that,
I think,
you know, that would never happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's how they would have had to have done it to even get it onto the screen at this time.
Exactly. Well, fortunately for everybody, the volcano does erupt and the three escape. And then this is the point that you were thinking about, I think, earlier,
they
Lydia.
They go in to save Lala, and they both die into the building. And,
and Lala comes carrying Bob Hope out.
I think, does Bob come out carrying Bing, and he drops him? And then he goes, what does he say? All this something and no pickle. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, and he runs back in, and then there's a Princess Lala carries him out. Right.
Bob out. I love
that. Yeah, thanks for the rescue. Yeah.
So they run away from the village as the village is getting presumably swamped by lava by the angry volcano god.
Exactly.
And come out into rice fields.
And which is very symbolic to many things.
Rice pudding.
Yeah. Lala finally chooses, she decides to go with Bing.
George.
Yep, George. Bing. We've been calling him Bing the whole time.
I know. And Bing says, well, don't feel so bad, buddy. Hey, don't you, does he ask him or does he say, hey, I forgot I've still got that flute?
Y'all, he motions that there happens to be a basket lying there on the beach. He says, oh, you got a basket. It's a shame you still don't have your flute. And Bob's like, oh, yeah. And he whips it out from underneath his cloak. Yeah, he does have it. So he sits down to try to grow himself a girl.
And does a very good job of it.
Oh, yeah.
Does an incredibly good job in the version of Jane Russell.
Jane Russell. Oh, wing ding. Ladies. Hey, wait a minute. What are you going to do with two girls?
That's my problem.
Hey, come back. Wait for me. Oh, no, you don't. Stay right where you are, folks. This picture isn't over yet. Stay right there. Keep your seat. Hey, come here. Hey. Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. No, stay right there. Keep it. Hey, George. Jane, Laura. Hey. Oh, no. No, stay right there. George. Get the writers. Get the producers. Get my agents. Get a girl.
That I laughed. I laughed out loud at that one. That was fantastic. Don't you dare. And then finally the screen goes black and it is quote unquote positively the end.
Perfect. And, I mean, you got to think that probably they were expecting this really to be the last road movie. I'm sure that it was the end of their contract for the road movies, and they probably really expected that to be the last scene of the last road movie.
Yeah, that's true, because they don't do another one. I think the next one is actually done by a
British company. Yeah.
A British company, yeah, and it's done many years later.
I think a decade, at least a full decade, I think.
Exactly. And so, yeah, they, I'm sure as far as Paramount was concerned, this was it, which is probably why they finally did one in color. It was kind of like, here's your final, your farewell. We'll do it in color. You know, we'll pull out all the stops. We'll get you these cameos. We'll let you do the stars. And so, yeah, it was a great I kind of feel bad that I didn't watch the other films now because I feel like I've missed out by coming in at the end.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it was
did.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, you did, Chris.
Well,
I'm sorry.
The great part about it is that, you know, we don't live in 1952, and you can go and find all of these films online or on DVD, and it's worth going back to the beginning and watching all of them.
I think I'm going to have to. I kind of forgot how much I enjoy the Bob Hope films. I remember watching some when I was younger. And it's just that kind of comedy. I'm a big fan of the vaudeville-like, you know, all these live stage performers mm-hmm. who go to film. Bob Hope going to back to Abbott and Costello, even some of the Laurel and Hardy, that kind of stuff. I really enjoy that kind of humor because they can get away. It's not a live performance, but it's almost as if the actors –
treat it as
it's a live performance.
Well, and that's,
exactly.
And we said it earlier that they do, you see a really different quality when you're watching this type of film because they do the whole thing in one shot, you know, or maybe they break it up into two shots or three shots, but you're not seeing like now, if there's in any movie, any scene, they don't hold a shot for more than 30 seconds, you know, whereas mm-hmm. these, you get these long performances and yeah, it feels a lot like a stage show just because there's not so much of, they don't break it up so much with cuts and edits.
You're absolutely
yeah, exactly.
right. There is such a sense of the performance here. In the moment you guys mentioned earlier where the fourth wall gets broken, it's that reference to Paramount Pictures and how they don't fall. What's amazing about that moment is that Dorothy Lamar is swimming and singing at the same time. Even if she's lip syncing, she's still singing and swimming at the same
that
time.
That is true.
Right?
I hadn't even thought of that, but that's absolutely right. You know, we don't get that anymore. Forget that we don't get songs in movies anymore, but that complicated kind of technique. I'm not really sure how to put it, but it's just such a different quality to watch these older movies. It's kind of more relaxed, but it's so enjoyable.
It is, and it's just so much fun. And it is, if you kind of you do have to kind of push aside, as Barry mentioned, some of the stereotypes and some of the comments towards some of the characters. You have to push some of that aside, but if you view it just sort of as this, ignore that.
I think you really only have to push that aside if you're an excessively sensitive person. Honestly,
yeah.
Except that this is a different time period, and a lot of the things that they say are not vicious. You know, a lot of stuff that we would think of now as being, oh, how dare they say that, really back then didn't really have that big of a meaning. So I think maybe I'm missing what we're saying, but I think that it's not, it's not.
Well, in this film, too, I think most of it is more of just sort of maybe a visual in the background. Mm-hmm. It's not really in your face. It's not with a lot of the dialogue, but it's like some of the, as Barry was calling it, the native stereotypes. And they were just, the figures in the background, they don't play major role.
It really is like a spaghetti Western. I mean, you just accept the fact that in this period of time, there weren't a lot of ethnic actors in Hollywood. Not a lot of ethnic parts being handed out. A lot of Italians mm-hmm. dressed up with headdresses.
Yeah, or just a lot of people with paint on their face.
Yeah. Sarongs and paint.
Exactly.
Well, I agree with you both, because you're right. This is not a mean-spirited movie, and that's one of the reasons it gets away with murder, and we let it get away with murder.
It really does.
And for Pete's sake, the tribal stereotypes in this movie are so ridiculous and so cartoonish and outrageous. Like, there's really nothing in this movie that can be taken seriously anyway to begin with.
Yeah, and even if you were taking it seriously, the minute the man in the monkey suit comes out,
the gorilla suit's crushed.
The gorilla suit. If you're still taking that film, this film seriously after that, you have many other issues to deal with.
Clearly, it's a huge comedy. And this is a legacy. This series, the Road series, is at risk of sounding pretentious. it's one of those classic series that you really have to see. If you've seen Gone with the Wind, you should see this. Because it's so much funnier. There's just not that much funny stuff in Gone with the Wind.
Good point.
Thank you.
Nope, absolutely a lot of fun to watch. And I will have to go back and dig up some of the older films and give them a watch. And I don't know. It's kind of one of these things that I kind of wish more of the Road 2 films were in public domain. But on the other hand, I'm kind of glad that maybe someone's giving them the respect they deserve by hanging on to their rights. Kind of torn on the matter.
Yeah. Well, again, the nice part is we can go back and watch them. Definitely highly recommend it that you see all these. We mentioned The Road to Morocco. Which is hilarious. The Road to Utopia, even though I haven't seen it in a while, I remember it being one of the funnier films that I've ever seen. So there are a few that I wish I had seen them all. Now I feel like I need to see them all too.
I just happened to see a DVD. It was a two-film DVD at a local store. And I'm kind of sorry I didn't pick it up now. It had The Road to Bali and The Road to Rio.
Oh, wow.
So I might have to, next time I go shopping, I might have to go ahead and grab that one.
Yeah, these are special films. They tried to recreate the Road movies in 1985. Just to name one example. In 1985, they did a film called Spies Like Us with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase, which has a cameo by Bob Hope. Bob Hope actually shows up at one point, which is completely underlying the Road homage. And then 2 years later, the infamous Ishtar was meant to be a Road movie. Unfortunately, at $50 million, it was one of the biggest flops of all time, and it kind of killed any more Dustin Hoffman, Warren Beatty Road type of movies. But, there's really no point in seeing any of the updates. These movies are still as funny and as clever, irreverent, and really quite ahead of their time in terms of breaking the fourth wall and having, really hipster kind of humor. These movies really, you know, there's no need to remake them. There's no need to see any need to see the updates. I mean, these films are as good as they ever were.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
So does anybody have anything else to say to close?
No, to drop in real quick, you know, we mentioned a few different movies. All of them are worth seeing if you get a chance to see The Ghostbreakers. One of my all-time favorite movies. Fabulous, fabulous movie with Bob Hope and Paulette Goddard. If you guys haven't seen it yet, you guys being Barry and Christopher, you guys really need to watch this movie. It's so classic. And Reap the Wild Wind is not a comedy, but it is a color with Paulette Goddard, John Wayne in it, the famous octopuses in it. So really, all of them are really good movies. I mean, they're all these classic, you know, these classic films with these great actors, and I'm highly recommended.
All right, fantastic.
I guess the last thing I wanted to say, I wanted to quote my two favorite lines from this movie. I was waiting for it to come up, and so I got my chance here. My two favorite lines are as such. Bob Hope at one point describes Bing as, "He used to be a lifeguard at a car wash." And then another great moment is where an elephant cries out, and Bob Hope goes, "Man, those Republicans are everywhere."
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. There's so much packed into this movie. It's one of those movies you can't get every single line the first time you watch it. You know, there's something extra and something funny each time you watch it again.
Yeah,
I agreed. I think it was the second time I watched it, there was something at one point, I don't remember, I think the native girls were hanging all over Bob and Bing, and you hear this cry off in the distance, and they're like, what's, you know, how do, oh no, I lost the name. Who was that? And he's like, oh, it's Errol Flynn. It says something about Errol Flynn and how the point, you know, how jealousy is or something.
Yeah.
Like, how fantastic. No, absolutely a fun film. And it does, it really makes me want to go back and watch more films like this and go dig up the, you know, the Bob Hope films again. Yeah. But I think that is going to do it for us this month. Thanks, Lydia and Barry.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Always a fun time, and even more fun when we get to talk about a fun film like this. I want to thank all our regular listeners of the podcast, and I want to wish, you know, welcome any new listeners. I hope you continue to download future installments of Orphan Entertainment. You can easily do that by subscribing via iTunes. And while you're there, please rate us and leave a comment. If you'd like to get in touch with us with any suggestions, comments, or general feedback, join us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/orphanedentertainment. Let's see. All those links and all the information will be in the show notes. So thanks again for listening. Goodbye until next time.
Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.